It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Morning and welcome in to Wolo and Friends. I am Landon Schmidt filling in for Wolo today. He will be back with us on Monday. But for today, we have a lot to talk about. We'll be joined here in just a little bit by our agent from Priority Sports. That is Andy Schiffman. We'll be talking all of the updates with the NBA as the season is drawing closer and closer to the end. And a lot of issues to talk about there. Still, this whole ordeal with tanking, how a third of the league has been doing that for more than half the season, and the product on the court is just not looking really great right now. But we'll also talk about the positives and the highlights as the playoffs are right around the corner as well. We'll see what Andy has to say about all those things, and then we'll wrap up today talking with Jonah Dillon, who kind of has his feet in literally everything Memphis athletics-wise. He has been helping out with the Grizzlies, Tiger football, Tiger basketball, so we'll kind of talk a little bit of everything with Jonah at the end of the day. But of course, the biggest thing that is happening right now in the world of sports is the Masters. Right now, after the conclusion of day one, the champion of last year, Rory McIlroy, is currently T1 with Sam Burns. And I don't know if you know this, Jay Ham. I didn't really fully catch and see if Greg and Eli had talked about this, but in the history of people who won the tournament the year before and then finished day one, either tied one or number one, have a pretty interesting finishing record as far as the ending of the entire tournament goes. This goes back to all the way. The first guy to do this was in 1957 when Jack Burke Jr. ended the day in the lead. He finished day one, number one, and ended up finishing the tournament at T7. In 1961, Arnold Palmer started the tournament off tied for first and ended tied for second. In 1962, Gary Player started just outright number one and ended T2. Jack Nicklaus in 1966 started the tournament off at number one and ended winning it once again in 1966. In 1995, I apologize for probably not getting this name right, Jose Maria Alazabal. Something like that, maybe. He started the tournament off T1. Actually, of everybody on this list, he actually ended up doing the worst. He ended up T14. And in 2016, Jordan Spieth started number one and then ended his tournament T2. So now, right now, we're looking. Rory has ended day one T1 with Sam Burns. So the big question is, based on everything in the history of how these guys have finished out, it seems like these guys, if they start out on the top, seem to be doing really, really well coming down the pike of finishing, I mean, top five, top two. I mean, a lot of these guys finished T2 at the end of the tournament. So I think we could look at, I know for Dave's show that the guys on Wednesday, they make three picks apiece for all of their guys. So they have a lot of players on the field, and I cannot remember who picked Rory, but in the afternoon show with me, Bryant, Brett, and John Goen, we all make a lock and a shock pick, and nobody had Rory McIlroy. So very interesting, because given the history of all of these guys who have ended day one in the lead, or at least tied for in the lead, have ended this tournament also doing a really, really good job finishing up the tournament. And Rory right now is competing to be the first player since Tiger Woods back in 2001 to 2002 to go back-to-back being a Masters winner. That'd be some elite company for Rory McIlroy to do that. I think right now he's in a really good stance. I think in 95 with Jose Maria, that finishing T14 was kind of the anomaly. All these other guys, I mean, started off well, finished really, really well. So I think we're looking at a good competition from Rory this weekend.
Good competition, it sounds like, indeed. And then anytime you drop some dynamic history like you just dropped on me, you got me dialed in on that. Because I'm like, oh, really? I'm going to do a little more of a deep dive on this because it's, this is interesting.
It is interesting.
People have been asking me all week, you know, who you got for the Masters? I'm like, dude, do it look like I really watch golf?
No, this is definitely the biggest of the golf events.
But
for
I will,
sure.
I do plan, since we have absolutely no basketball whatsoever tomorrow.
Yep.
No NBA at all, no women, no any. If I want basketball, I got to go find something overseas. So this will give me a time to go ahead and have at least one of my screens down at Augusta National, seeing what's going on. And, of course, my guy Mo Schefter, he's also a big golf enthusiast. He wants to bring it in. He wants to bring some golf analysis in. He may lure me into even actually making a bet.
Well, hey, that's the thing. I think right now you're hitting this little streak in the sports world where you kind of have to shift and you kind of have to find things to bet on. And here in just a second, I'm going to help you out in the UFL because we're going to break down the UFL because I have been all over that bad boy.
I hadn't watched
since
the first week. But,
oh man! Oh,
but I do
some,
like what's going on.
Oh, dude, there is good product on the field this year. It is going to it's going to be good. I'm going to break down each team for you to the best of my ability of what all I can give you here in just a second, but man, this is the product that they have in the UFL right now looks really, really good. Definitely could be something to bet on. Shout out to who I call Golf Mike for listening to me taking the Renegades over the Battle Hawks last week. They covered their point spread really, really easily. So this is like the only time that I could actually help you when it comes to placing bets and gambling or anything like that. Usually you wait till I'm off and then you listen to Johnny Radio and hear all of the great insight that his guests and that he has to help you out with that. But when it comes to the UFL, I'm going to do my best to help you out with that. But that's also the same thing with golf and especially with baseball coming around the bend as well. And I know for Johnny Radio, you guys have Jorge, fellow Mets fan. We're starting to somewhat figure it out, I guess. Nolan McLean, whoo, like that guy. But anyways, with the going back to the Masters right now, the current board sits at T1. Rory McIlroy and Sam Burns both at under 5. Tied for third, we have a three-way tie for third. We have Patrick Reed, Jason Day, and Kurt Kitayama, both all three of them under 3 right now. Tied for 6, you have Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Justin Rose, Shane Lowry, and then coming in at tied for 10th is Tommy Fleetwood. One of the featured groups today that I think is going to be one of the highlights is going to be the group of Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, and Brooks Koepka. I know Brooks Koepka earlier today had like a 300-something yard drive off the deck to make it to the green, which was really, really impressive. I know him coming back from LIV, really kind of an interesting transition there, but definitely trying to make his way back into the PGA tour of things. Justin Rose this morning actually begun his day by utilizing a putting training aid to reduce rotation in his left forearm. And I think with a story like that, it goes into the depth of just how much these guys are dedicated to the craft that and the art that is golf, and how they are always, always working on their game and looking to improve their game. Justin Rose, as hopefully all of us here in the Memphis area know, he is the one that won the FedEx St. Jude Championship last year, and so he's doing really, really well. He's in the mix of one of the top guys on the leaderboard, and one of the big things that we've learned about the Masters in this course at Augusta National is the fact that these greens can be really, really tricky, and so having a great putting game is going to go a long way in helping you stay in the mix of everything. And then Jordan Spieth, I believe, started his day off with a good birdie. So that should be a really good group to keep an eye on today. Is Spieth, Rose, and Brooks Koepka should be a really interesting crew to keep an eye on. Scottie Scheffler this morning, I don't know if you saw this, but he is... He was doing exactly, I think, what I would do, and that is capitalizing on the food there. He came out to the driving range this morning with, I think it was like 3 breakfast sandwiches in his hand or something like that. I don't know if that was like for his team or if they were all for himself. If it was me, they would all be for myself. I would try to capitalize on that.
That they're all for him, and he took advantage of the value pricing that they have.
Oh, you ain't kidding. Oh, man. It's like the hot dogs at Costco level. I mean, those prices, they ain't changing, man. They're going to stay at $1.50 or whatever they are.
Hey, man, the snack bar at Costco and Sam's, they're undefeated.
Oh, they
for
are.
Lunch? Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, I think one of the most slept on things that we have in this area is if you want a great slice of pizza, good old hot dog. I mean, I know a lot of people, when they're thinking lunch or a good snack, don't immediately go to a hot dog, but still.
I've never been that enthused about a slice of cheese pizza.
But hey, there's something about it. Something about it at that place. But yeah, right now, the Masters Day 2 is very underway, and we'll be looking and keeping updates all throughout the day to see what is going down. I believe today is the day in which the field will be cut in half. So a lot of these people need to step up their game if they want to continue playing throughout the weekend. Should be a very interesting day. I don't foresee a lot of changes happening or anything insane happening for the course today or for the leaderboard today, but you never know. You never know if somebody just comes out of the blue and really hits it home. I think still for Scottie Scheffler, I know a lot of people were saying that, you know, a new kid on the way, probably not sleeping very well, might hit a little bit of a slump. The fact that he's always going to be in the mix, no matter what's going on, he's always going to be a guy who's up in the top of the leaderboard. He's always going to be a guy who's competing. So, and to see him with a smile on his face and three breakfast sandwiches, I think he's doing all right.
Well, that, and then you say he's got a kid on the way?
I think he just had a kid.
Okay.
So well, I think he's got two now.
It could have been, well, it could be one of those deals. You remember Fred VanVleet in the 2019 playoffs, mm-hmm. where he couldn't hit anything, and then once the kid was born, he wouldn't miss anything.
Yeah. I mean, slumps are going to happen. Consistency is one of the hardest things to achieve, no matter what kind of sport you're talking about. But when you do achieve it, it's beautiful to see out on the field. But we will keep you updated. That's about all of the updates we have right now as the day is slowly getting started. Got a long day of golf ahead of us for all of this. But hey, that group of Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose, and Jordan Spieth should be really, really good to get you started up on the day. So now, one of these aspects that I'm going to do my best to try to help you get a little bit more invested in the UFL. I know our friend Darian Newsom, working with Action News 5, closely related to Fox News. I know Fox News has a lot to do with this station. The UFL, I mean, tonight we have a game on Fox, 8 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be 7 o'clock for us. The Orlando Storm is moving over to the Louisville Kings. Orlando Storm is one of the only two undefeated teams right now in the UFL. Definitely a second place team, but right now, the team that if you are going to bet on them, if you are going to focus on them, if you want to know anything about who you need to focus on in the UFL this year, it is the Dallas Renegades. The Dallas Renegades right now are the team to beat. They have already put up 30-plus points in both of their games, dominating fashion, led by quarterback Austin Reed, who was just a backup with the Bears just last year, moving over, actually beat out Luis Perez, who a lot of people thought he was going to be the starting QB for the Dallas Renegades, beat him out for the job. He currently leads the league in passing yards right now, and in his first game, set the all-time UFL single-game passing record with, I think it was like 376 yards or something like that. Has 7 TDs on the year right now. He leads the league with 616 yards. Granted, we're only two games in. Week 3 getting started tonight with that game that I just mentioned, but his favorite target right now is Tyler Vaughns, who is absolutely incredible. I believe he was with the Steelers practice squad, played a little bit in the preseason last season, but he is electric right now. He is leading the UFL right now in receiving yards, 290 total, and right behind him, not far. I mean, right now the Renegades have two top five receivers in terms of yardage this year, and that is also Greg Ward on that. Defensively, they already have at least two guys with an interception on the year in Sean Wade and Stephen Jones Jr. I mean, all around, the Dallas Renegades are a great team, the team to beat, the team to look out for. I think it's one of those things where if you're just looking for a bet, if you're looking to go out there and make some money, I think you cannot go wrong betting on this team. I know that they play tomorrow against the Columbus Aviators, which we'll get to them in just a second. Columbus right now is 0-2, an okay team, unironically enough, that they are really more of a rushing team. team, which is ironic since they're called the Aviators. You would expect them to be a air attack team, but no, they're more of a rushing team. But right now they're sitting at 0-2, so the Dallas Renegades looking to continue their winning ways. Tomorrow that would be at 12 p.m. Eastern, so that would be an 11 o'clock game for us over here, over down in Frisco, Texas. So really, really interesting. But right now, put all your money on the Dallas Renegades. I think they are the team to beat. Next up, the only other undefeated team in the UFL is the Orlando Storm. Their quarterback is Jack Plummer. He is second, he's third in the league with 422 passing yards total right now, right behind Birmingham Stallions QB, which is Matt Corral. We should have a lot of familiarity with him here, who has 433. For the Orlando Storm, his favorite target, second in receiving yards, is Elijah Badger. Look out for him. Their running back, Jashawn Corbin, is also second in the league as far as rushing goes with 117. Basically, the Orlando Storm has a really high-powered offensive team. And Orlando and Dallas, as I've mentioned, the two undefeated teams right now, the teams to beat. For the Louisville Kings, who the Orlando Storm is going to be playing later on tonight. Not a whole lot happening there offensively for this team, led by Jason Bean as their quarterback. He is all right. Not a lot of flash there, but the Louisville Kings have a really good defense. I think they have like three linebackers and maybe a defensive lineman who are leading the league in tackles right now. They have guys who can fly over the field. Really good defense for the Louisville Kings. I just don't think that their offense is there yet to really help and support them there. As I mentioned, the Birmingham Stallions, who have always been since the USFL transferring to the XFL. Transferring to the UFL now, the Birmingham Stallions have always been a great team. Matt Corral, as I mentioned, his favorite target is Jaden Mickens as his top receiver with 165 receiving yards on the year. And running back Anthony McFarland led week two in rushing. He had a big, big explosion in rushing for that team. The St. Louis Battlehawks, a team that I have a little bit of favoritism towards because a former Hawaii receiver, Stephen McBride, is on that team. He's not really doing much for that team right now, but granted, this is also the problem I have with the Battle Hawks. Brandon Silvers is their quarterback. Brandon Silvers is not a bad QB, but he has to be one of the least mobile QBs I think I've ever seen.
That's problematic today.
It is very much problematic. He is a pocket passer through and through. The guy, I mean, I like you could set his tail on fire, and I don't think he would be able to run to get it out. The dude's very, very slow moving, but he's got a good ball. He's got a good handle on him right now. He's fourth in passing with 384. He has weapons. I think the only reason they won week one, I can't remember who they played, was they had some great skill positions, and all Brandon Silvers had to do was throw some screen passes and watch him move, watch him run. But when it comes to the Battlehawks, I believe their main attraction has always been their defense, and their defensive line is good. They are a scary defensive line. They can get in the backfield, cause a lot of problems for you, so they have a really solid defense. That's for your Battlehawks. The DC Defenders are last year's champions. They opened up the year kind of getting smacked around a little bit, but then they started to figure out their way. They are led by quarterback Jordan Ta'amu and running back Deion Jackson, who leads the league in rushing right now. And also their tight end Mason Fairchild is a highly graded offensive player. He's been doing really, really good for them as well. Their defense is also really, really good. They only lost to St. Louis. That was the team that they lost to with all those screenplays and whatnot. So DC Defenders, all around a good team. The Houston Gamblers, I'm still trying to figure them out. I can't really put my finger on them. I mean, for all purposes of what all they are, what all they are doing. Hunter Deckers, I don't know a lot about him, is the QB. Jontre Kirkland is their top wide receiver, and they have a decent rushing attack with Jalen White as well. So a few good players for the Gamblers. I believe they're one of the teams that are 1-1. The Louisville Kings, like I mentioned, led by Jason Bean, not a whole lot on their offense. But the Columbus Aviators, really, really interesting for them. Like I mentioned before, kind of a little bit interesting that they're the Aviators, but they're more of a rushing attack team led by Jalon McClendon, who is the dual threat QB in the league. And shout out to Darian, who finally decided to show up and help me out with the show today. He is a heavy dual threat quarterback, maybe the best in the league, because right now the Aviators have three guys who are topping the league with their rushing attack. That is McClendon, and they also have their running back, Zaquandre White, and Toa Taua, clearly a Polynesian guy there. But that is your breakdown for the United Football League.
I got a quick question for you, sir. What's up?
Hey, that is a good question.
I heard the anger in your voice when you said our friend Darian Newsom.
Oh, I'm never angry. You know that.
That's radio talk there. But quickly, Stephen Jones Jr., any relation to the Joneses? Like Jerry Jones? He's in Dallas. It just made me think.
I don't think so. He's one of the guy that I think he has an interception on the year. He's one of the few in the UFL that has an interception so far.
I know if the little Jones had a littler Jones. That's all.
No, not to my knowledge. I don't know the history of all of these guys as well as I maybe should. But that is your breakdown of all of the teams in the United Football League. Now that you're here, Darren, you can actually join in on the conversation. Have you been keeping track with the UFL to any degree?
The Dallas Renegades, sir.
Yeah, you have. That's all I'm talking about, man. Dallas Renegades are the team to look out for, dude. I'm telling you, that is good. That is a good team. Austin Reed is incredible, and Tyler Vaughns, I can almost guarantee you right now that Tyler Vaughns is going to land some kind of skill position on an NFL team next season. If he continues to do what he's doing right now, he's been in the UFL for the past few years, and he's been doing really, really good. He's had solid stats, but right now he's on track to nearly double all of that by the end of this year. So really, really look out for that guy. That is the guy to keep an eye on, and Austin Reed, who has been playing incredible for those Renegades. Definitely something to look out for the UFL. In other news, I discovered this today, even though it maybe happened a day or so ago. Are you familiar with the Nebraska forward Burke Buyuk-Tunsil?
No, not at all.
Burke Buyuk-Tunsil, for sakes and purposes, I'm just going to call
him. Is
he
in the transfer portal?
Burke. He is in the transfer portal. And it's really interesting on how he went about announcing him being in the transfer portal, because he the other day got a tiny tattoo on his upper forearm commemorating Nebraska's historic run in the NCAA tournament this year. On his little forearm here, he's got 28-7. Nebraska's final record for the year. Definitely historic. The best basketball team that Nebraska has ever had in their history. The most NCAA tournament wins that they have ever had.
Well, full disclosure, sir, this is the first year they've ever won a game.
Exactly.
So
historic.
It had to be historic.
Yes, it is historic. So he got himself a little tattoo, 28-7, right there. Very, very memorable, very part of his history. And to celebrate, he decided a day later that he was going to enter the transfer portal and leave that Nebraska team and go find and seek a new opportunity. Now, I am not one to judge, though it definitely sounds like I'm coming off that I'm going to judge this guy very harshly. I'm not going to judge this guy very harshly, but what I will say is it's a little bit of an interesting move to get a tattoo that signifies 28-7 that I'm sure somebody's going to ask him and be like, what's that all about? It's like, oh, well, you know, this team that I played for last year, we won two NCAA tournament wins. And then they could ask, well, don't you think you should have stayed and maybe made more history the next year? He's like, nah, I got to chase that bag and get a new opportunity and do something else at another team and probably another Big Ten team, since the Big Ten seems to be leading all athletics right now. But I also get too that this is kind of like this. Actually, hearing this reminded me of what actually you, Darian, showed me about Zach Edey's new tattoo. It's kind of like a history of where you've been and where you're going. So if you know, Lord willing, or whatever happens, that Zach Edey moves on from the Grizzlies down the road in the future, he still has his Grizzlies tattoo. He has his Purdue tattoo below that. So it's kind of like the journey showing of where he's been, where he's going for. It's like a roadmap of his life on his body. Now, would I have maybe gotten a tiny tattoo that says 28-7 on my upper forearm? Probably not, but that's, you know,
Yours would obviously say Sports 56, not 24/7.
Like I don't think I'd get a Sports 56 tattoo. Sorry, I don't think. I don't think
right
I would
on the
do
upper
that.
Back shoulder.
No, I've got plans for my upper back shoulder. I've got plans for my upper back shoulder that I will not reveal to you. But I just think it's a really interesting move to kind of sit there and say, you know what, I'm going to get this. And I get that that team, that season is always going to be a part of his history and his journey. So I understand that aspect of it. Maybe, like, I don't know, maybe get the Nebraska in. I mean, make it a little bit more interesting than just 28-7. But, you know, to each their own. Maybe he's a numbers guy. Maybe he's a minimalist. I don't know. I do not know what Burke is all about. I just know that that might be a little bit of an interesting call on his part. But we do have a busy show, so we're going to hit a break here in just a second. On the other side, we're going to be talking with Andy Schiffman about everything that is involved in the NBA. Well, not everything. We don't have all week to do so, but we're going to try our best to cram it all in a little bit of time. Don't go anywhere. On the other side, from Priority Sports, our agent Andy Schiffman, he joins us next.
Not only can you listen to your favorite shows on Sports 56, you can also watch video of the shows live on Twitter and YouTube. Watch and listen every day at Sports 56 WHBQ. Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin. All we hear is
welcome back into Wolo and Friends. Landon Schmidt filling in for Wolo today. He will be back with us on Monday, but right now we have to shift our conversation and talk about all things in the NBA with our agent from Priority Sports. That is Andy Schiffman. Andy Schiffman, first off, good morning to you, and I want to come out the gate talking about a player that is close to you and one that I sorely miss here in Memphis, and that is the legend of Yuki Kawamura. Last night, the Bulls win over the Wizards. He had 6 points, but he also had one of the cleanest no-look assist pass to Leonard Millard, who went ahead and dunked it in. What do you think of Yuki, and do the Bulls keep him going into next year?
Well, it's a fair question. Do they keep him going into next year? Obviously, here in Chicago, there's been quite a shakeup recently with them firing the president and the GM. First off, when I think of Yuki, I think he's pound for pound one of the most fun players to watch in today's NBA. And obviously, as you alluded to, Landon, in Memphis, he was a fan favorite, and that's no different here in Chicago. I think he's great at what he does, being scrappy, getting in the weeds, making everyone around him better, and just playing with guys, being unselfish. I think long-term, I think there is a pretty low ceiling on his NBA career. I think that the success he's had in the NBA, right, you've seen it in Memphis on a two-way, just kind of playing spot minutes here and there, maybe at the end of a season, games that really don't matter much, or in some blowout wins, one way or the or losses for that matter. And here with the Bulls, he's getting more of an opportunity here in Chicago, but obviously that team is not built to win. And so I think for right now it's great. I kind of think that's the playground that he's in, right? Just, you know, maybe a garbage team, not really trying to win, cycle through. And that's pretty common for a lot of players in Yuki's situation. Now, he's extremely talented, but I think ultimately he will. I mean, he could go make a ton of money in Japan. I can tell you that much. I know he's making a lot less money in the NBA than he could in Japan, or what he even made in Japan previously. And I don't, the second part of that, man, I don't think he's going to stick around long-term with the Bulls. At the deadline, obviously, they made a slew of trades that didn't yield any first-round picks, unfortunately, but they just stocked up on guards for whatever reason. And a lot of those players are free agents. So I just think moving forward, I think Anthony Simons may be the only one under contract in terms of the guard they traded for, and Dillingham still on his rookie contract. But I think moving forward, I don't really see him part of their future plans. I think they're going to hire a new president of basketball operations here in the next few weeks. Chicago is. They've made it very clear how they feel about Billy Donovan as their coach, and it's his job if he wants it, which I hopefully that will be the case, because I love Billy and I think he's a great coach for players. We've had a lot of success with anybody played for Billy. Just, you know, they have a lot of pieces that really don't fit together right now, and they're not really built to win. But I think they could turn the page with a new front office, but I don't really see Yuki as part of those long-term plans.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, but I think Yuki, I mean, he's like you alluded to. I mean, he's such a lovable player. I don't know how anybody could really go against him. I mean, he's going to be an underdog, shortest player in the NBA. At least right now he is, and I don't think that's a record that's going to be broken anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, the dude's just lovable. I loved watching him, and I remember going to Grizzlies games, starting chance for Yuki late in the game, and then he'd finally get in, drain a three, and it was like the most hype that the crowd would ever get is seeing Yuki on the court. Yeah. So he's definitely a draw. He's definitely got that the Japanese influence that comes over here, and whatever team he's a part of, I mean, it spikes interest over in Japan for all of that kind of stuff too. So
and I don't want to rule it out completely. I don't think he's going to be here long term. I don't think he's going to maybe stick around so far in the NBA for long term. But again, like, if he is still two-way eligible going into next year, is there a world? Like, he is a good player, right? So I wouldn't rule it out completely, especially with one of these teams that are not really going to be contending for a playoff berth or for a championship, kind of in this quote-unquote rebuild mode.
Yeah.
Just to your point, I agree. I think there is some value there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so should just be interesting to kind of just keep an eye on that and see where he's going. But I think that's a completely fair and reasonable assessment for him. So now looking at the biggest issue in the NBA, we've been talking about it what seems all season long that this has been an issue, and especially winding down to the end of the season, the NBA saying that they're going to take steps and they're going to do something about this tanking. The Grizzlies, for example, having lost 15 of their last 17 games, have started. I didn't even know this. They have started a record in an NBA record 25 different players this season. Just one of the most interesting things. I mean, you never know who's going to be on the court for these teams and for the teams who are tanking. Right. You're paying these tickets. You're paying these prices to go out there and see NBA talent, but you're seeing guys that you've never heard of before. These people are signing 10-day contracts from leagues like in Mexico and all the way around. Like, you've never seen these and you don't know anything about them. So the product is really, really bad. What does Andy think that the NBA should do to handle this tanking problem, if there is anything that we can do?
Well, first off, I do think it needs to be addressed in some way, shape, or form. Secondly, I don't think any of the teams are in favor of it, quite honestly. I've talked to a number of GMs in passing over the last couple of weeks, and no one's really happy about it. And a lot of the pushback is coming from these teams that are in this rebuild mode, and they say, well, if this happens and this comes into effect in the short term, next season, two seasons, what have you, the common theme from all these decision makers, at least to me in my conversations, is how do we rebuild then? How are we supposed to rebuild? How do we get better? Because if it's a market where you're not going to go out there and land a top free agent because maybe the city's not as attractive and or the team is just not competitive, so you have better players opting to go sign for maybe a little bit less money even to go to better teams, you really have to build through the draft or through trades, and it's very difficult in the trade market. But look, every team should be able to go out there and build through the draft if they do a good job and evaluate talent. And then all of a sudden, if you're losing year in and year out and you don't have the ability to go out and grow your team from a productivity or quality standpoint by going out and having the better chance to go out there and draft the better players coming out, and all of a sudden you're, for example, we talked about Chicago, you're a team like Chicago, one of the worst teams in the NBA, one of the worst teams in the East, and you talk about the Nets and the Wizards and the Pacers, and all of a sudden you're now in that same bucket picking in the draft as a, and again, this has been talked about in the NBA, this is why I bring this up, a team that made the play-in, and all of a sudden that's a team that is a technically a playoff team. Maybe they slid out of the playoffs and into the play-in because of injuries. But the reality is, whether it's like a Charlotte or Orlando or Miami or Phoenix, I mean, these are all relatively good teams in the top half of the NBA. And you're giving them similar odds to in the draft and in the lottery to these other teams I mentioned. I think they have a point. I think that's a bit unfair. But to your point, look, this is the tale as old as time. How do you reconcile it? I don't have the answer. I like the idea, and we've talked about this in the show previously, of somehow extrapolating out a team's record over two seasons, as they, I think they do that in the WNBA. I personally did kind of like the idea of maybe looking at a team's record as of the trade deadline versus throughout the whole season, But again, these are all options. It has to be approved by the Board of Governors and the MBPA as well. So there's a lot of obstacles that lie ahead, and I don't think there is a clear answer. But I don't know. I mean, I really do think it needs to be addressed, because you're exactly right. You have NBA fans across the U.S. paying money, paying hard-earned top dollar to go see players and go see teams, right? And the Grizzlies are a prime example. The average Grizzlies fan probably has heard of maybe two or three players out there on the court. And in a typical year where you'd be paying money, you go pay $100 to go sit lower level, lower bowl somewhere, or even you're taking your family and you got two kids and you're sitting upper deck, but after everything else that goes into going to a Grizzlies game downtown, parking, food, et cetera, it's a few hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And you can't name more than two guys on the roster, and they're getting blown out by 30 against OKC, and maybe it's a game where OKC is even resting their stars. Like, is that really worth it if you're truly caring about the NBA? And so I do think that has to be addressed, because at the end of the day, like, fans drive the revenue. Basketball-related income is derivative of fans paying for tickets. And again, I'm not going to sit there and say the well is going to dry up and fans are going to stop going, but it would definitely upset me as a fan, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So allow me real quick to play devil's advocate, because Dave has kind of mentioned what he believes the or a solution could be for this tanking problem, and that would be to have a hard cap for these teams and to do away with the NBA draft. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny, because we've kind of kicked that idea around internally here, and I remember Dave mentioning this.
Yeah.
I do like the idea. I don't know how practical it is. And again, like, I do like the idea, because then you take away the draft, which I would be in favor of, because starting Monday here at Priority Sports, we have many members of our 2026 draft class coming here to train for the draft, preparation for the combine. So the next 2-3 months of my life are going to be so chaotic in planning for the draft simultaneously and planning for free agency, right? Plus all the college stuff, transfer portal, et cetera. That's a new layer to all this. So all of a sudden you do away with the draft. That means all these college kids are not going to have to worry about preparing for the combine, dealing with injuries and workouts, flying around the country to visit all these teams, and again, added injuries in that time period. So you take all that away, save everybody a lot of time and money. I think that's beneficial. And then almost treat it like almost like a free agency for rookies before NBA free agency. I like the concept where you have a separate salary cap. Every team has an even playing field, access to the same dollar amount. And then it's just like, look, go out there and bid. If you want the number one pick, go out there and whatever team gets it. And the Washington Wizards or the Sacramento Kings are no worse off than the New York Knicks or the Denver Nuggets, for example. It's just a matter of how you want to allocate those dollars. Again, there's always going to be holes you can poke in any of these concepts. That's the problem. This is not a surefire solution to all of the issues. I think you could potentially make the argument that certain of these ideas from Adam Silver and even Dave Wilotion, they fix one issue, but they create another, right? So I think it's just going to be a continuous conversation. Maybe the NBA implements something in the next year or two, and it's kind of like trial and error, and it gets tweaked over the next couple of years. I don't know, but I don't see the current system continuing for too much longer, though.
No, I agree with that. Well, I guess switching to what is positive in the NBA right now, you're kind of, as the season is winding down, we're kind of getting a clearer picture of who's going to be making a good run for the playoffs right now. And I think the big story right now is the Lakers, who are out with Luka and Austin Reeves right now, two of their top scorers on the team. And we've seen that LeBron has had to step up and really kind of take control of this team. He did really, really good last night, 26 points, and led them to a win over the Warriors, even though the Warriors decided to rest Steph Curry and we didn't get a Steph versus LeBron matchup all year long. Do you expect the Lakers to get their two superstars back before the playoffs? And if they don't, how much of a run can they realistically make with just LeBron at the helm?
Yeah. Well, look, if you're a Lakers fan, you really hope they get Austin Reeves and Luka back, especially Luka. I don't know. I don't necessarily know Luka's going to come back for the last few games here in the regular season, and I wouldn't be overly concerned with that as well. I mean, they're sitting in fourth place right now. I'm looking at the standings. I mean, they're just a game back of Denver for the third spot, and they're not going to catch up to San Antonio, obviously. So I think right now, look, rest Austin, rest Luka for sure. Get him back healthy for the playoffs. I think if you go in to the playoffs without those two players and just LeBron, I do think they could probably win a multi-game series in the first series. But if you go too far down the road, especially once you get to the second round, I don't see it happening really for the Lakers to advance if they don't have primarily Luka.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side, if you have a healthy Luka and LeBron, and I'm not even going to say, like, let's talk about Austin Reeves, who's a great player, but really, for me, it's Luka.
Yeah.
I don't see why they can't at least get to the Western Conference Finals. I think it's going to be a very tall task. I think they could potentially beat a Denver Nugget team. I think it would be very difficult with San Antonio and OKC. It's just, you never know in the playoffs. I mean, I think in the West, in my opinion, like the two untouchable teams, let's say, that should go as far as possible, given how they match up, are OKC and San Antonio. I mean, I really like San Antonio. And you saw throughout the season when OKC got off to the hot start and then San Antonio whooped them, I think, what, three straight times? When you get a healthy Wimby back, there's no reason, even though they're the two seed, there's no reason they can't go all the way and win a championship. There's none. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if OKC's there either. But you can make just as strong, if not a stronger, argument for San Antonio. And then these other teams in the West, I mean, Minnesota's kind of fallen off. It's been unfortunate.
Yeah.
Phoenix, Clippers, the play-in with Portland and Golden State. I think they could make some of these series a little bit competitive. I don't really see them advancing too far in the West.
Yeah. Well, on the flip side, who's your favorite to win the East?
I'm not going to say Detroit, and I have a couple players on Detroit, so I've watched a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll put it this way. I would feel more confident now in Detroit with Cade back.
Yeah.
But I've seen them enough. I'm just not a true believer in them long-term.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be really nice to see them get all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. I wouldn't be surprised if they get that far, but I also would not be surprised if they lose in the second round.
Yeah,
Boston, to me, is the one to watch. I really have liked them all year, even before Tatum came back. But again, like, Cleveland is a dangerous team. New York is a dangerous team. I'm going to go with Boston.
All right. I mean, I can't argue that, because a lot of people wrote...
It's all subjective.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, a lot of people wrote off Boston before the season because they said, oh, no Jason Tatum. Well, good luck even making the playoffs. And I think at this station, I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think I'm the only person.
And again, and to your point, he's not going to get MVP.
Right.
But Jaylen Brown has to be in the conversation, given how he carried the Celtics without Tatum.
Yes.
And they were still a top team in the East all season. No one saw that coming.
No, nobody predicted that Boston would have a 54-win season this year. I mean, yes, they lost a heartbreaker to the New York Knicks, who are also a very heavy favorite to win the East this year. But still, I mean, this Boston team, if they can do it without Jason Tatum that long, who's to say that they can't make it all the way to the very top?
Absolutely.
So very, 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 very good insight. I guess that's why Dave keeps bringing you back and talking to you week after week to talk the NBA, and that's one of the reasons why I love talking to you each and every single day. But unfortunately, we are out of time. But it's always a pleasure talking with you, Andy. Wolo should be back with us next week. But as always, my friend, you have a good one.
You too. Thanks a lot.
All right. That is our agent, Andy Schiffman, with Priority Sports. Always fun talking the NBA with Andy. Always, always a good time. But on the other side, we got to switch our conversation a little bit and make conversation a little bit more central to the Memphis area, talking some Tiger basketball with some new additions, talking some Tiger football with practice getting started up on the field, and yes, even a little bit of Grizzlies if we have time with Jonah Dillon from the Commercial Appeal. That all comes your way next on Wolo and Friends.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome back into Wolo and Friends. Landon Schmidt filling in for Wolo today. He'll be back with us on Monday. But right now, we've got to switch our conversation from the NBA and talk about all things going on in the world of sports in the Memphis area. And who better to do that with than Jonah Dillon, who's kind of got his feet in really anything Memphis athletics with Tiger basketball, mainly Tiger football, which we'll be talking about, and a little bit of Grizzlies as well. You can find him at the Jonah Dillon on Twitter, and he's the commercial appeal beat writer for your Tigers football team. So first off, good morning to you, Jonah. And with everything kind of going on and the biggest news with Tiger basketball, with Fred Smith Jr. and Cello Jackson Jr. Committing to this Tiger basketball team, what is it that you can tell us about these guys?
Yeah, I mean, obviously people, as we know, everyone gets excited when local kids from Memphis want to play for the Tigers. And that's kind of been a conversation over the past couple of years of a lot of guys not necessarily doing that. Now there's obviously a ton of factors, people transferring for high schools like Cello Jackson, stuff like that. But Fred Smith Jr. is someone who's been kind of at the forefront of Memphis high school basketball for a long time. Like when he first won a state title in Mr. Basketball a couple of years ago with Briarcrest, I think he was on a lot of people's radars as as someone to watch. And if you look at his high school career, I mean, he's legitimately an all-time Memphis high school basketball player in terms of what he accomplished at Briarcrest. Obviously, when you spin it forward, four-star recruit, and somebody who, again, because he's so well-known in the city, you knew that if he decided to play for the Tigers, it was going to be a big deal. And I think you saw that yesterday after he committed, just the response. And obviously, it was expected, so it wasn't out of nowhere. But I think someone that people are really excited about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know we are, too, especially with the whole entire history with Fred Smith and the city of Memphis. So kind of going in a little bit of a broader spectrum, we know that the transfer portal is alive and well right now. And one of the biggest names and one of the biggest mentions for the Tigers that's on the market right now is P.J. Haggerty. For you, would you love to see or would you like to see P.J. Haggerty have a reunion with the Memphis Tigers coming into next season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it makes sense from the Memphis perspective because you saw what he did when he was here a couple years ago. I mean, he was an All-American, right? You can't be a lot better than that. And obviously, the team had a lot of success as well. The thing with the portal is obviously, you know, the money goes up every year. You're seeing teams like LSU that are in the mix, which is interesting because NC State was one of the teams that was after him when Will Wade was there last year. Mm-hmm. So there's the connection there in terms of he's recruited him before, and now Will Wade, obviously, at LSU. It's hard to know. Obviously, like, you can look at it and say, okay, well, it makes sense. Obviously, he had a lot of success at Memphis, and Memphis would want him back. It's just hard to know what the money is out there in the transfer portal when someone goes in. And so that's why you can kind of think about these are potential targets, and obviously he makes all the sense in the world as a target for Memphis, but you don't really know what that's going to look like until you see what other people are offering and what the options are.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. So what do you think it would take for Memphis to land P.J. Haggerty back here?
Well, that's the thing. It depends on – and it's, obviously it's different for every person, right? And you're talking about someone who has 1 year left of eligibility, and obviously he's made a lot of money in college. Yeah. So part of it is, do you want to position yourself for the NBA? What's the best way to do that? What are you looking for? Are you looking for fit? Are you looking for who has the most money? Because those things are all different at every place.
Yeah.
And that's why it's kind of hard. You can sell somebody, and it's different for every recruit. You can sell someone on, you should do this, you should do that. But without knowing the specifics of what they're specifically looking for, it's hard to say who's the front runner and how that's going to play out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree with you there. Another big name that a lot of people have been keeping an eye on or have a lot of interest in is somebody who was a Tiger killer last year, and that's Rowan Brumball. Can you see a world in which where Memphis lands Rowan Brumball, or is there something that happens where it has to be either P.J. Haggerty or Rowan Brumball, or could we possibly get to a place where they land both?
Yeah, I mean, for the second part, obviously, it comes down to money. There's only so much money, right? And there's a lot of money at power conference schools. Rowan Brumball is an interesting one because, obviously, he's had a lot of success at Tulane, and certainly if you're a Memphis fan, you've seen that success against Memphis.
We're very familiar. But
sometimes with a guy like that who's going to having that year to kind of maximize your potential, both in terms of earnings and in terms of positioning yourself for the next level, a lot of guys do say, I want to go play in a power conference. I want that experience. I want to play against those types of teams consistently. And again, I'm not talking specifically about him, but when you go after someone like that, you just don't know what they're looking for in terms of what is the priority. But look, like you said, he obviously you've seen the success that he's had. He would be somebody, and then you've got a connection with the new assistant coach from Memphis. So it makes sense, again, that he would be a target, but just hard to know what those conversations look like.
Yeah, it is very, very interesting because I think, too, a lot of people are thinking, like, yes, Rowan had a lot of success with the American and maybe wanting to look to kind of up that competition going somewhere else. But if he remains in the American, I mean, that's the priority opponent that you're going to be playing a majority of the year is American Conference opponents. So staying in the American, I mean, he's going to find a lot of success if he stays in that realm. So I think it should be interesting to kind of see where the Tigers go and landing all that stuff. It is kind of interesting to see also that we don't really have a lot of words on or kind of any kind of direction on any landing spots for people. Do you know if there's anybody on the market right now that Memphis has shown heavy interest in or that they're looking at pretty heavily to land to come here to play basketball next year?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of people, obviously, who have I guess, received interest. Mm-hmm. It's still super early. Like, you're not seeing a ton of commitments yet from anyone. And part of the reason is, again, it's all about the market, right? So if you're a player and you go in the portal, maybe you want to take a couple visits. That takes time. The portal's been open for a couple days, right? So you got to sort that out. And then, look, it's all about leverage, right? So people are trying to figure out their rosters and how they fit. And then they're trying to figure out which players are going where and who's on the market and things like that. I think that's what you're seeing, especially with the portal window being pushed back this year from where it's been. You're seeing a little bit of, okay, let's figure out what's going on here and maybe where who's serious, where guys are visiting, and then you start to narrow in. And I think that's why you haven't seen necessarily like a ton of commitment, not just in Memphis, but really anywhere so far.
Very, very good point there. Just real quickly with the time we have left, kind of switching gears, talking what you primarily cover in Tiger football right now, practice getting started up, and with each passing week, we're getting closer to the season, which is hard to believe. But for right now, for what you've seen with Tiger football, is there anything noteworthy that has stood out to you, whether it be with Coach Huff, the quarterback room, any other positions or anything like that that has caught your eye?
Yeah, I mean, I think the speed of the team, it feels like it's different, and that's something that Charles Huff has talked about a couple times in terms of the recruits that he brought in. Now, obviously, this is basically an entirely new roster, so a lot of the spring for the coaching staff is kind of just working out, you know, what do we have here, and who's going to fit into what spot, because I think there's still a lot of that to be done. I think now that they're getting towards the back half of spring practice, they're starting to solidify some of, okay, this is our group, you know, maybe not here's the depth chart, but here are the guys who are in the mix for these positions. And then you're going to kind of see that solidify as they get out of spring practice and into the summer, where it's really about, okay, this is our team now, we got to start implementing scheme more specifically, and we got to start focusing on which players are going to be the significant contributors for this team.
Yeah, one guy that I noticed that you had tweeted about that's got a lot of attention to him is 4-star recruit Antonio Kiefer out of Southwind. We know right now from what we've been revealed that he is in he's competing with not only or Memphis is competing to get him with the likes of Ole Miss, LSU, and Ohio State. One, I think, for the program of Memphis, for a guy for Memphis to be in the mix with such powerhouse teams like that is such a huge thing for the University of Memphis. But what can you tell us about this guy, and how big would it be for Memphis to even to land him?
Yeah, well, local recruiting has been a thing that Charles Huff has talked about really a lot consistently since he got here, and it's only been a couple months. And even just seeing the guys that they've been offering and recruiting, there's a ton of guys, if you're out at a practice, who are players from the city of Memphis and the Memphis area who they're recruiting. And obviously, you're talking about one of them there. The fact that Memphis is in the mix with those schools is a positive, right? Oh, yeah. Just you see a graphic and Memphis is there next to LSU and Ohio State. It's like, okay,
right?
That's a positive for them. It, obviously, you know, these situations, you don't know what's going to happen, but I think that it's a sign that Charles Huff and his staff are taking this really seriously. And I think you're going to see a lot of guys from Memphis, even the top end guys, consider the school really, really seriously in a way that we haven't necessarily seen over the past couple of years.
Yeah, that's really, really a positive thing that I'm drawing away from that too. Is, I mean, if we're in the mix with big time schools like that, I mean, you think about college football, you think about those teams. So the fact that he's in the mix with all that, really, really good. Well, Jonah, that's all the time we have for today. Dave will be back with us next week, so you'll talk with him. But as always, my friend, it's a pleasure talking with you. You have a good one.
Yep, you too.
All right. That is our man, Jonah Dillon, from the Commercial Appeal. He covers Tiger football primarily, but man, he's got his feet in just about everything. Today, enjoy the Masters. Definitely keep yourself tuned in to a little bit of UFL talk. I kind of broke down all the teams for you. Take that what you will. If you're just looking for something to bet on, I gave you the teams to look at, so go and run with that. That's about all I can give you as far as the world of gambling goes, but coming around the corner is the guy who will give you everything and more, and that is Happy Hour with Johnny Radio, Darian Newsom, and the historian Jay Ham. Like always, my friends, it's going to be a good day.
It's time for the ultimate Hot Wings Showdown at the World Championship.